the House Committee on Land Use. We'll rejuggle our agenda just a little bit, and we'll start off with House Bill 3120, followed by 3137, and then 2705, depending upon the availability of Representative Richardson, if he's able to be here on 2705. So we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3120, and I'll ask Representative Esquivel to please come forward.
Oh, short chair. What is this?
You need a bed.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6, which is Medford, and this 3120 has been brought forward. I brought up on behalf of Jackson County, and I have a great pleasure to introduce one of our newly elected county commissioners. I've known this fellow for a few years, I think probably all but about 10 years of my life or something like that. And he's up here to discuss this bill with you on the ins and the outs and the presentation on the bill itself, but it was on their behalf, his in Jackson County, and the commissioners that I brought forward this bill and dropped it. So.
Well,
this is Commissioner Smith.
We'll have Commissioner Smith.
As soon as Sam reads us what the bill's all about.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission.
House Bill 3120 essentially is one that deals with several aspects of by measure 37, which was passed by the voters in November of 2004. This particular bill is, I think, in response to a number of panels that we've had with county commissioners and planners and legal people. I said there were a number of issues that need to be addressed. This particular bill will focus in on two of those. For counties or cities that take any actions to essentially waive the requirements of a local land use decision, it would protect the county from taking that action, from any action from the state, from Land Conservation Development Commission and DLCD, which may take any actions against that particular jurisdiction as a result of their 37 claim of decision. And it would also prohibit any civil action from any other property owner who would then claim a loss of value, again resulting from the action that that local decision-making body did with the 37 claim.
Thank you, Sam. CW, good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Garrard and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you this afternoon. I'd like to introduce myself. I am Dennis C.W. Smith, County Commissioner from Jackson County, position number 2. And I give my greetings and salutations from Commissioner Jack Walker, who is recuperating from some complications from surgery, but is doing much better now. I'm appearing here today in support of House Bill 3120. We feel that the bill is essential for a fair and impartial implementation of Measure 37. As this committee is well aware, Ballot Measure 37 provides for local governments to enforce, modify, or choose not to apply land use regulations in response to specific claims under Measure 37 decisions. About these claims will be made by various jurisdictions for a variety of reasons. The facts of individual cases will, of course, be a major influence. In some smaller, poorer jurisdictions, the least expensive course will be chosen. In others, a policy may be adopted that falls squarely behind the sponsors of ballot measure. In all cases, the decision will be made in full view of the public. The one reason that should not be the basis for making a Measure 37 decision is fear of retaliation by a state agency. House Bill 3120 holds the counties harmless from the state's Land Conservation and Development Commission and the Department of Land Conservation and Development for any actions taken or not taken as a result of Measure 37 response. We ask for your support in assuring us that one level of government won't punish another for carrying out the wishes of the state's voters. House Bill 3120 also speaks to another area of protection for counties. Alameda 37 is silent about the roles and the powers of neighbors of those affected by county decisions about land use regulations. Jackson County has already been threatened with a suit by adjoining landowners even before we have acted on a particular measure at 37 Plain. Again, decisions cannot be made with a gun to the head. House Bill 3120 prohibits civil actions due to decisions made in response to Measure 37 claims. We think this legislation is in keeping with the intent of Measure 37. It is fair to all parties and will ease the implementation of the law throughout Oregon. And thank you, and I would be pleased to answer any questions you have.
Any questions of Mr. Smith? Mr. Ackerman?
Well, just to both of you, while I have you both in my sight, so to speak, I just want to give you a hypothetical and see if this is true. Suppose that this bill passes. Jackson County issues blanket waivers, okay, just across the board, no documentation of claims, just a blanket waiver. Is it your position that there could be no enforcement of that practice if it was contrary to law?
Well, if you're taking a hypothetical, I can't see how we would ever give blanket waivers. We haven't contemplated that, and our process doesn't call for blanket waivers. So I'm not sure how you're intending or what you mean by blanket waivers.
It may not be your practice to do it now, but maybe a new set of commissioners down the road would issue blanket waivers. Okay. And I'm assuming that the blanket waivers would be contrary to law.
They would be.
And what you're asking for then is immunity from those types of lawsuits, so you could issue blanket waivers.
No, that's not what we're asking. And we wouldn't do anything existing under the law, contrary to law. This question of blanket waivers has come up before, and I cannot see where that would ever occur in Jackson County, even with the existing makeup of our commission. I don't understand how that would come about.
Okay. Does that mean you'd be satisfied with an overriding state law which would preempt the authority of local jurisdictions to grant blanket waivers?
I don't have a problem with conforming to state law. We do not ever envision blanket waivers being. We adjudicate each one of these claims as a tort. And I can't see how you could get to the point where you would even allow a blanket waiver. Because there are so many varied issues on lineage and property ownership and title and adjoining property issues, the health and safety issues of the Measure 37 requirements. So I'm asking a hypothetical that I can't see being ever in action.
I have one more question.
Follow.
Let's assume that the state has a statewide law which requires that all applications under Measure 37 for compensation be accompanied by a certified appraisal. Jackson County decides not to do that. Would Jackson County under this bill then be immune from that enforcement action?
Possibly. Possibly could be.
On what justification?
We presently do not necessarily require an appraisal, even though there may be a natural outcome as soon as we do an analysis through planning. So we would probably be in conflict with if that were the law, which presently it isn't. But that might possibly be the case.
Thank you.
Representative Greenlick.
Yeah, let me move away from the hypothetical and talk about it in general terms. And I've been very much in the forefront, I think, in times in this committee talking about local control, and particularly talking about county control. But it does seem to me, I'd like to ask you about both parts of your bill. It does seem to me that we assign state agencies responsibility. And if they're the wrong responsibilities, we ought to change them here. And we're talking about how to change those responsibilities. But I'm not sure if we can operate in that context where we give a state agency some responsibility for overseeing actions and then we say, but if anybody operates in opposition to the policies you've been given to enforce, we'll hold them harmless from your sanction. Would you explain to me the sort of theory behind that?
Well, there is a substantial history DLCD and various counties being engaged in various enforcement actions, and it causes a tremendous amount of additional expense to the counties. In this case, Measure 37 comes to us addressing a very specific group of quote-unquote a special class, in this case, of injured citizens. And what we are trying to do is get through this process with the least amount of encumbrances and try to do it as fairly and as quickly as possible so that we can get on with the rest of our land use issues and planning issues that we are engaged in. And I think in this issue, we're trying to say that this is an important issue for the electorate. They voted for it by 60% in all 36 counties, relatively, 60% statewide. And what we're trying to do is get beyond that and not have the potential for additional conflicts that might stifle, first of all, people who have legitimate 37 claims, because there are people that do have a good number of legitimate 37 claims that are waiting to see what's going to happen to them. There is a fear factor out there. There have been a whole series of lawsuits and challenges to various folks who have been trying to do things with their land. So this hopefully will address some of that issues. But let me address another issue that you bring up, Representative Greenlee, is the fact we have been in discussion and we are in discussion about certain compromises to this bill. So we know that it doesn't address some of these issues. We hope that discussion will continue at least.
Yeah, follow-ups? Follow-up. Let's go to the other half of the bill. I mean, it seems to me that you're suggesting that if the county government does something and you create an aggrieved citizen as a result of doing that, you want to immunize yourself, you the county government, against that aggrieved citizen's ability to take their grievance into the court system. Is this a bit unprecedented?
It may be. I'm not a legal expert on that point, but I do know that the system can be used and abused, and what we're trying to do is, number one, create a public hearings process, which we do have and will continue to maintain, and address all of the issues that are pertinent to those. And a lot of it has to do with a lot of these decisions are made in good faith by your various county commissioners, and we want to continue that process. But we are concerned about a series of lawsuits that will stifle or even prohibit people from making even most rudimentary applications for Measure 37 because of the potential for being dragged into court over any number of issues that may be real or unreal. We have a potential issue coming before us, the citizens that are the adjoining property owners have stated that they're going to have all kinds of impacts to their vineyard. We did an aerial view of all the vineyards in our county, and we did a comparable analysis of what the soil types were. A very extensive review. What we found out is that this would be the only vineyard that would even get close to anywhere near the other densities around these other vineyards. So we're trying to make these decisions as clearly as possible, but it wouldn't prevent those people from filing a lawsuit under this case and then compounding our problem even further. I mean, we are going through a very extensive process on each application. We've gotten close to 50 applications now. We've adjudicated or moved a minimum of 12 already through the process. process. There have been two denials. There have been a series of do not applies. We choose not to apply certain land use laws based on where the acquisition acquired the property. And what we've found is that we've not done a lot of the things that they've asked. So, and this is done with the full review of our legal counsel and public hearings process that we maintain. A lawsuit in the middle of this process, and we're trying to get through these as quickly as possible so we can move on. It would compound the problem even further.
I need to make a final comment.
One follow.
One of the things Measure 37 has done is it's guaranteed some citizens access to the court when the county doesn't behave in a way it wants to behave. So citizens have access to the appeals court specifically around this. It seems very odd to me, and if I were a citizen of your county, I would be not happy with the suggestion that you were going to the state government to take away my right to go to court to grieve issues of your county government. So some citizens can go to the court with their concerns about land use, but other citizens can't. That seems to me to be a bit odd. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. CW, could give me a scenario of the potential lawsuit that you or suits that you see coming from neighbors? What is it that they're potentially suing over?
Well, the arguments could be that there may be problems with their existing water levels, groundwater levels. There may be dust from the additional traffic, and we would be talking about four or five additional residences over a 150-acre forested section of land adjacent to a 40-acre vineyard. All of those issues may or may not be real. And of course, we do evaluate the soil types for septic approvals. We do all of that process. That still exists. The other issues are groundwater issues, but that issue impacts all rural residents, despite whatever 37 may or may not allow. So they're all what ifs. Kind of contentious issues that really don't have any standing, because we will be addressing the buffering of agricultural lands. Just as an aside, so you understand what we're trying to do in Jackson County, we have unveiled a new program, and it's not related necessarily to this issue, but it's called Rural Renewal. And we know that there are certain farmlands adjacent to cities that farmers really don't want to give up their property. And we're developing a program that's funded that gives them grants and creates a business plan, and it's a 15-year granted program that allows these farmers, first of all, they are forgiven each 5 years of the grant, or not the grant, but the loan, so that there's no tax consequence. But it also maintains those rural farmlands. We're very excited about this because it's a balancing of, first of all, the farmlands that are in jeopardy of being absorbed into urban growth boundaries, and trying to maintain those farms that are truly farms. That's part of the question. We've done a good job of delineating. Well, we haven't done a good job of delineating farmland from marginal lands, and we want to really maintain our farm properties. So.
Thank you. Representative Escobar, I understand there has been a discussion on amending this bill. Can you give us any direction?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have several people involved in this, several sides. I believe Dave Hernicutt will be involved in it. Jackson County will be involved in it. I believe Representative Shutterly, who's now head of DLCDC, will get some input into this, and we just want to make sure that we have a good mousetrap when we bring it forth. So there will be some amendments coming.
Any further questions of our guests?
But I'd like to say one thing, and maybe it wasn't really spelled out here, and that was Representative Greenlick's comment about you hire a state agency to do land use, and yet you're kind of blocking them out of the process. You know,
then we didn't walk them out of the process. The citizens took it in their own hands to pass 37. And it stemmed from 7. And it stemmed from actually what I'm reading in with what people are telling me. It was that the government wasn't listening to them. That was the real problem here. Government was dictating to them, and so they took things into their own hands. And of course, in this state, sometimes we don't like the consequences when they take things into their own hands. And so I think the LCDC is probably realizing, and I can't speak for them, but they're probably realizing that this particular venue, their job's changed. And I think we have to realize that in this venue, their job has changed. Just in this one little venue. Now, the rest of it is different. Because if we go forth with our good land use, and I think we have some very good land use, I think we have some very, very good municipalities and counties that understand smart growth. I think we understand higher densities and the value of those densities within an urban area. I think that we understand the cause and effect of sprawl. If we've really done anything, have we really curtailed sprawl? I'm not sure that we've accomplished that, but I do know that was one of the intents of Stakeholder 100, and I'm not sure we have or we haven't, but I do understand that we have, and unfortunately, you're not aware of this, but I am, and Dennis and I both are, and it's called the Southeast Plan in Medford. The Southeast Plan itself, just to show you, took 13 years to plan it. Renco Station in Portland is approximately 80 acres or something like that. The Southeast Plan is over 1,000 acres. It has high density, it has low density, it has commercial, it has retail, it has schools, has parks, walkways, and it's a well-defined community. It's a city within a city. And these kinds of things are good. They will continue on. But in 37, I think in that venue, I think there is a change in 37 with the LCDC's role. That's just my opinion.
Green looks on the edge of his chair, but we'll make him wait for him.
He'll sit back.
I just have a quick question, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Smith, we hear quite a bit in this committee about farms and real farms, and people use different terms. Just so that I can understand, you use that term, and I'd like to understand how you distinguish a real farm from the other kind.
I think when you talk, well, first of all, I did a little farming myself. I was in Representative Garrard's county for a good number of years. We had a farming operation where we farmed 2,000 acres, and then we had an additional 4,000 acres that we leased. And we were hay farmers as well as we pumped our own groundwater. So we moved a few hundred thousand tons of hay over the course of time. So we understood, I understand the issue of farming. We have done a good job in trying to identify certain lands for EFU, exclusive farm use. But what we haven't done a good job of is that we've identified lands that aren't even close to being exclusive farm use. They have no value for farming of any kind of commodity crop or issue, not even for even the marginal issues, and that's part of the problem. We have citizens who are stuck in that kind of situation where they have these fairly large tracts of land, had anticipated maybe dividing it up for their children 100 acres or so and giving 20 acres here. They can't even do that. And we have one a lady who's in her 80s, and she and her husband, and he passed away this last year, they went about the business of trying to scientifically prove to the state, the DLCD, that they couldn't farm this land. It was inappropriately designated as EFU land, and they wanted it to be able to divide it up. We've done this to hundreds of our residents and said, well, this is exclusive farm use. So how do you define farm? That's a very good question. The farm, to reasonably, and I don't expect a profit either. Most farmers don't. They're trying to get a profit. There was a common joke among my fellow hay farmers that if they won the lottery, they'd be able to farm another 5 or 6 more years. And the fact of the matter is that, but no reasonable effort can be made to even show that this land can grow a crop or support a livestock or issue. It has to be very intensive, very small kinds of things. Feed has to be brought in. The land itself can't be utilized in that regard. And we need to have another designation. Rural residential is probably the most common form of. But of course, I understand there was an effort, and may I be so bold as to say there was an effort to prohibit rural residences in our counties for a long period of time, and it has now come back to bite us. But I do understand the issues of farms, and I understand small intensive farms. And I understand that if you put a family on a 10 or a 15 acre piece of parcel, it may be very marginal land, but they can effectively make it into a productive small farm, but not for large tracts. It's causing a lot of people to be land poor for no good reason.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I think what happened, and I'm going to give you some history, and you and I know a little bit about the history there. I think we had a broad brush approach back in the 70s to comply with, to set up kind of a model county outside of the Willamette Valley in conjunction with DLCDC, and that was fine, and the intent was, so we're going to do a broad brush approach to the EFU and different zonings and things of this nature, and with the intent, and it was a good intent, of coming back in later and reevaluating those properties as they came aboard to see if it actually was. I can show you EFU land today, but the only thing you can grow on it is rocks and black widows. That's just a fact. You couldn't grow anything out there. And we do have that in our area, but it was due to this broad brush thing. And of course, then we ran out of funding and we couldn't apply the proper people in order to work on these individual pieces as we go along. Now, as they come through the mill, we've been working on some of those, but there's a bunch of them still in our county that, I mean, there's no way they should be EFU. There's just no way.
Representative Greenwick brought up a good point, and I'd like to add to that. We look at this state and try to apply a broad brush of land use across the state, and it's very different. The Willamette Valley is completely different from southern Oregon, and it's very different from the Deschutes, Cook County, very different from Hood River and those lands. When we originally set up, and I knew members of the original committee, and most of them have passed away, a couple are still alive, Citizens Committee was appointed to meet the goals of designating the EFU land in Jackson County. They spent a year and a half doing that, and these were, one was had a doctorate's degree in agriculture, and another was a master engineer who wound up running the Medford Water Commission. A whole series of very, very learned, very experienced, long-standing, very reasonable men and women. They went about the business for a year and a half designating and actually going out and spending 2 nights a week and usually the weekends finding the truly agricultural lands in the county. And that was soil 1 and 2 class types, the 4 criteria, as you know, under the original goals. 40-acre minimums. 40-acre minimums, if you recall, that was what the case was. And was there a crop or a commodity that could reasonably be supported by the land? They went about that business. They did that for a year and a half. They identified about 100,000 acres in Jackson County that truly met the land use planning goals. They were very proud of that work. Unfortunately, and here's where we had the problem, LCDC or DLCD said, no, 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 you have to have far more than that. And kicked it back, and at the time, the county commissioner said, well, okay. So we just simply went around and sort of haphazardly said, any one of those four criteria will now apply. If it had irrigation, it then became EFU. If it had a class 1 or class 2 soils, it became EFU. And none of the other criteria would apply, any one of the four. And they expanded it by an additional 100,000 acres. Overnight, people were basically, I would say, robbed of their property rights. And they knew they really weren't sitting on farmland. And so that's our problem. That's our story in Jackson County. And I've heard from all of those residents over the course of my public service, and I think Representative Anderson has heard the same story. That's not the same story in the Willamette Valley. And maybe we need to districtize the DLCD process. Maybe we need to have a Southwest district and an Eastern district and a Willamette district, because they're very different, and so they're trying to apply these broad brushes, and we have these narrow rivulets of truly good soils in Jackson County, and the rest is rock or aggregate issues or what are the in what, where you have this huge expanse of the, probably the most fertile land in the world is in the Willamette Valley, and I understand what the concerns are here, but they're not the same. And we've been using the DLCD rules in a broad brush approach, and it hasn't been effective. Centralized planning doesn't work. It didn't work in Eastern Europe and Russia, and it doesn't work now. And that's what you saw in the Measure 37. People knew what they were voting for. It is not true that people didn't know what they were voting for. Every time I went out publicly, there was more information, and that was always a great discussion in the course of the campaign. My opponent didn't support Measure 37. I supported Measure 37. And I supported Measure 37 to try to correct a long-standing wrong. And I think I was right. And a lot of the voters agreed with me. And so that's why we're here today. We're trying to, first of all, move through the process, get rid of some of these vexatious kinds of lawsuits that sometimes inhibit us from forward progress, and get this out of the way. We want to move on. We want to get this Measure 37, correct the wrong, move on, and get back to where we were with reasonable planning, reasonable zoning, and make it work well.
Representative Mormont.
Thank you. I guess I need to comment on both statements. I'm not a big fan of Soviet planning. And I frankly believe one size does not fit all. So a brushstroke bill that says the county can be immunized by one stroke of the pen for many of its citizens taking its action to court sounds more Soviet to me than it sounds American. And I'm for the American way, I can assure you. I do believe Measure 37 gave us a message. However, the message isn't clear. And if it was clear, if we weren't so committed on this committee to straightening out the mess that those rules were that people voted for, we'd say, fine, let it go and let's spend the next 12 years in the courts figuring out what it was about. We won't have to figure it out, but we are committed to figuring it out, this committee, and I think the Senate committee as well. And that means that we do need to find a way for DLCD or LCDC to have some role, and it's not the same role they've had, and I suspect it's not a central role. I suspect it'll be more of a regional role. We have bills before us in that way, but the question is, whatever the role is, simply because Measure 37 was passed doesn't mean we should give up giving our state land use activity some ability to do whatever it is we think they should do. I think we need to work hard to make sure what we're assigning them to do is a reasonable thing to do, not an unreasonable thing to do. I've been championing this committee for 3 years now, doing away with stupid land use decisions. I think stupid land use decisions are a big problem. But I also don't want to be throwing out the baby with the bathwater and saying, okay, there's going to be no role on the state level to look over what the 36 counties do.
I believe it is in all of our interest to define that role in a careful way, but then to still give them the authority to do whatever it is we assign in our wisdom to them to do. And if we decide, as a general rule, no statewide planning, everything will be done county by county, then we don't need this bill. Then we'll just let the counties do it. My guess is that isn't even what the counties want us to do as a general matter. If it is, I can live with that model too.
I don't know if there was a question in there or
not. No, I think there was a reaction to Representative.
I'm waiting for the other two statements.
There was no question. I mean, I think we're in this together. I don't think this is, you guys up there don't understand what the situation is. And if you just figure out that everything's going to be fine, the fact is, we're working very hard to make this work.
And I hope I didn't give you that impression. That was never my intent in my discussion here today. I hope you don't think that. That's the way I think. I don't. And I know that this issue is going to be openly and freely discussed as it should be.
Representative, knowing that the bill will probably be amended, we will not go to work session today on the bill. How much time do you feel will be adequate for discussion on possible amendments? When would you like to bring the bill back?
Mr. Chair, I think that I need to get some time to speak with all the parties to see what time and all. Of course, you live a long ways from me.
Yes.
So I'll just pass a note underneath your door next door.
Well, I'm a neighbor who's considering suing you, don't rely on you.
Is it because I made a decision and probably got a drop?
It's you might pass a goal that takes away
that. Let's see if you sign on to this one, you can't do that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Commissioner, thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you.
Mr. Shetterly.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Wayne Shetterly, director of the new Department of Land Conservation and Development. Pleased to be with you again today. I always enjoy hearing stories of the old days.
Mr. Director, did you say new and improved? Or just
new and improved, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, just reacquainting a budding friendship with Commissioner Smith from Jackson County, who I had the pleasure of meeting just a couple of months ago down in Medford. I will be very brief. I did have some conversation just before the meeting, and Representative Esquivel and I visited about some amendment. I think from what I heard of testimony too that the real intent of the bill was basically to say that if a local government makes a decision that is authorized, and I think that's probably a qualifier that's missing in the language of the bill, is authorized under ballot measure 37, that they simply would not be subject to enforcement action by the department or legal liability. And I think that's entirely unobjectionable. If it's a legal decision for the local government to make, then they ought not to face enforcement liability or legal liability for having made a legal decision that in fact is authorized by ballot measure 37. And I think that would take care, I believe, of the concerns that I heard expressed by Representative Ackerman and Representative Greenwood. I don't think the bill was intended as a shield for otherwise illegal land use decisions. I was speaking with Representative Esquivel and others with an interest in it, and it probably just takes some wordsmithing to make that intent clear in the bill. And I've said that we would be pleased to work with them to do that. In fact, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Representative Ackerman.
Yes. If we come out of this session with certain statewide standards regarding the implementation of Measure 37,
that's right.
We would expect those to be binding upon the local agencies.
Thank you.
If so, who's the enforcer?
Yeah, thank you. That was, Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, that was a good question you raised. I made a mental note and then completely forgot to address in my comments that I just made. I think to the extent that the state, first of all, right now we just have ballot measure 37. And in fact, ballot measure 37 says that a decision to modify, remove, or not apply is not a land use decision. So I think that in itself probably takes us out of the enforcement arena for decisions that in fact are authorized by and come within the scope of ballot measure 37. If in this legislative session the legislature adopts legislation to attach certain additional requirements or criteria to those local land use or local decisions under Ballot Measure 37. I think this is a bill that you would probably want to keep in the rearview mirror so that you have conforming amendments so that whatever other conditions you attach to that local decision-making process would be incorporated as a requirement for local governments to follow in order to be immune from liability. I think that's just a sensible way to do it. You can do that just with the amendments as you make them.
Any other questions, Mr. Shirley? Seeing none, thank you.
Thanks, we'll work with them.
Don Schellenberg.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Don Schellenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. While it's true that the Farm Bureau did not take a position on Measure 37 during the election campaign, that doesn't mean that the measure will not have harmful effects on the agricultural industry. In a recent interview with our state president, Statesman Journal asked that question, and President Bashir's answer was that it will damage agriculture's land base. Since the election, our House of Delegates has clarified our policy with the statement that, quote, we are opposed to removing the applicability of land use laws as an alternative to financial compensation. We clearly support financial compensation and ask that the legislature take action to provide for financial compensation. In that context, and in the context of our policy, it's very difficult for us not to oppose a bill that insulates a local government from penalties for not applying a land use provision in their county comprehensive plan. Perhaps just as problematic is a local government not applying a provision of a comprehensive plan that is required by state rule or law. On a side note, there's possible resolution to that issue that you'll be discussing in the form of House Bill 2100 come Wednesday, and that concept is articulated already here this afternoon. The second concern with House Bill 3120 is probably an unintended consequence of Measure 37. One of the principles of land use planning is the certainty you have that conflicting uses with the primary activity in the zone will not occur in the future. Not applying a land use provision in the zone would make a conflicting use entirely possible and probable. In addition, it may reduce the value of your property. Current law allows such a person to sue for damages. As I understand this bill, that right would be removed. In view of these concerns, the Oregon Farm Bureau asks that we not approve House Bill 3120. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Any questions, Mr. Shellman? I have just one quick one. The Farm Bureau has endorsed compensation. They have endorsed developing a compensation method. Do you have any ideas where compensation should come from or how it should be developed?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that is an issue that we have not had a lot of discussion about, quite frankly. I did bring that to our land use committee, the advisory committee to the board, and our policy does not address where that compensation should come from, but when I did take it to the advisory committee, I laid out for them the different forms of potential compensation that Senator Wendell's working group has been looking at, and they said all of the above. The principle is that this is a general public issue. It's a public policy, and we certainly support that compensation, and it should be the public should be financing that compensation. It's simply like many other laws, rules, and regulations that the public wants us to abide by, and yet in the agriculture community we don't have the opportunity to recover costs for those additional rules and regulations, and so the appropriate place for that is if the public wants those rules and regulations, then in some way the public needs to accommodate that and compensate for those. So just in a general nature, they just said, you know, whatever the legislature comes up with, you know, barring making, of course, the landowner take care of it on themselves, by themselves individually. But in a general sense, they thought it was general public responsibility.
We could always tax Farm Bureau members west of the Cascades. I mean, that was a joke.
Yeah, I'm laughing, Mr. Chairman.
That look on your face was... Representative Summer.
Yes, sir. In regards to compensating people for property, what in your view have we accomplished if we do come up with some money to compensate landowners? What have we accomplished as far as long-term solving of the situation that people aren't allowed to use their land? What, in my view, what we've done is compensated the landowner. Now his property is worth even more. He's still not able to use it, and he's got to pay higher taxes. Is that incorrect?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sumner, what you do with compensation, of course, is to you're actually purchasing development rights. In effect, is what you're doing with compensation. If you leave the land use plan system the way it is, and you compensate them, Senate Bill 100 and attending legislation did provide for compensation. Unfortunately, it was never brought about for the very same reasons that we're still talking about it today. Nobody's figured out a way to do it yet, but essentially what that was purchasing development rights. It leaves the land then in agricultural production as it relates to EFU zones. Now, another zones, I'm not going to make a comment about what the practical effect is.
That it leaves the land,
Paul.
It leaves the land in the original property owner's hands, and he has not resolved the situation that he had to begin with.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative, it depends what it is they want to do with the land. If they want to do something other than what the rules, what the land use plan rules provide for, that's correct.
Any other questions? Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Art Schott.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Art Schott. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. I'd like to share with you that I believe House Bill 3120 raises some very important issues as it relates to addressing issues that have been raised with regard to Measure 37. Certainly the question of local governments' fiscal responsibility, should they either waive or remove a land use regulation that is applied to a piece of property that's subject to Measure 37, is an issue that local governments, especially counties, are very cognizant of. And I think, if you recall, I've mentioned to you in the past that probably 90 to 95% of the regulations that counties have imposed as part of their comprehensive plan and land use regulations are directly derived from either state statute or administrative rules. And so this is extremely important to us, given the fact that there is little local discretion currently provided for in the land use planning system within the state that counties have. And so when we look at counties' fiscal responsibility potentially, as well as what's mentioned here, a state agency taking an action if a county does not enforce either a statute or administrative rules, that's of quite concern. I think the bill goes partway in addressing that issue. I think there's another way of also addressing that issue, and that is for the state of Oregon to accept responsibility for state statute and administrative rules, and to clarify that, you know, to accept that responsibility and, if you will, remove that responsibility from counties or cities where they are derived directly either from statute or administrative rules. That puts, shall we, the responsibility on the branch of government that enacted those requirements either through statute or administrative rules at this point. That being said, Mr. Chair, I think that what you have in House Bill 3120 is, or should be, either as a standalone bill or as an omnibus bill that you probably will see sometime during this session, an essential part of that bill that needs to be addressed in terms of the responsibility and what, if you will, liability falls to counties, given the relationship between the state and local government and the land use planning program, given Measure 37.
Any questions, Mr. Stock? Seeing none, thank you. Arthur.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 3120? Okay, seeing that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3120 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3137. Sam?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, House Bill 3137 is a measure which will define, for the purposes of land use statutes, community groups, and it will require that cities and counties to recognize these groups that meet these requirements. Currently, you may be aware that cities and counties provide notice of land use actions from partitions to subdivisions to properties within a specified distance, could be 100 feet to 500 feet. Many cities also have recognized by the city councils neighborhood associations. Not all do, but many do. And certainly some counties also have that. This bill that you have before you would establish, would define a community groups. It has a definition for that, and it would require the local governing body to recognize these new groups as being for receiving land use applications and being able to comment on those applications. So that's essentially the bill.
Okay, thank you. Jim Just. The committee, we have no one as far as the sponsors of the bill. No one who testifies, so.
Good afternoon, Chair Girard, members of the committee. My name is Jim Just. I'm executive director of the Go One Coalition. And this bill would implement language that first appeared in statute in 1993 with the passage of House Bill 2261. That bill, 2261, streamlined the land use decision-making process and introduced the concept of limited land use decision. And this language pertaining to recognized neighborhood and community organizations was inserted into that bill as a way to ensure adequate citizen involvement in these facilitated decision-making processes. As Mr. Litke said, many cities and a few counties have implemented a language pertaining to neighborhood organizations. Our research has only found one instance where local governments have adopted any provisions addressing community organizations. What might those be? What and under what circumstances may they be recognized? And the only example we could find was in Portland, which recognizes ethnically based community organizations. So this bill would, the intent of this bill is simply to implement the statutory language, provide some guidelines for local governments as to what organizations must do to become recognized and provide for that recognition. And I think I'm done with my explanation. I'd be happy to address any questions you might have.
Do you really have any questions of Mr. Justin? I have one. Tell us something about Goal Run Coalition.
The Goal Run Coalition is a statewide organization of citizens and citizen groups. Its function is to advocate for effective citizen involvement and to provide support to local citizens and citizen organizations.
And Mr. Just, how many members do you have?
We're not a membership-based organization. Our membership, our donor base, our support base, numbers in the low hundreds, including, of course, if you include the membership of member organizations, the membership is much larger if you count the membership of the organizations that support us.
Thank you. And Representative Barnhart has arrived, and so I apologize in earlier stating no one here from the bill was here, and here you are. So, good afternoon, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. And we were playing musical committees this afternoon. Representative Nolan was up in the water a few minutes ago. I wanted to make a few comments about this bill. This is the second session in which it's been introduced. And the main point, I think, of this bill is to make certain that land use issues are addressed by community organizations of sufficient scope to actually address the issue that might be facing the government organization that's considering it. If you look at the bill, you'll notice that most of it is simply referencing or adding these organizations to various notice requirements in various spots in the already existing statutes. The point of the first part of the bill is it really sets up a definition of what a community organization must be in order to be recognized, in order to require recognition by a government entity. When you're dealing with neighborhood issues, a neighborhood organization makes perfectly good sense from the standpoint of looking at the thing. Are we talking about a neighborhood park? Are we the need for a stop sign at an intersection? The use of a block, rezoning a block in the neighborhood for some other use, that sort of thing. When you're dealing with larger planning issues, a community organization which is larger in scope might make more sense as a way of helping gather information and provide that information to the body that's going to make the land use decision. The definition in this bill really says that every person whose residence is in or who owns property within the boundary of the community organization would be a member of the community organization and could participate in its activities and deliberations. The intent of the bill was really not to limit the number of these organizations in any specific way, although I will note that we have presented an amendment, the Dash 1 amendments, that would limit it to would limit them to no more than a county in size, or in the event of the metropolitan area to the metropolitan area, metropolitan service district itself. I also would note that, and perhaps Mr. Just can comment on this. I think there's one error in the bill on if I can get myself back to it, in lines 19 and 20. I think the in lines 19 and 20 was intended that neighborhood organizations be allowed to veto each other's size or boundaries if they overlap, but not community organizations. That the community organizations could form even if neighborhood associations didn't necessarily approve of them. But I think that's something that can be fixed easily with an amendment. This bill, I think, comes under the rubric of requiring notice to those people who are interested in land use decisions. And rather than requiring every individual to ask to be notified of every land use decision that takes place in the county, that there could be organized a community organization who would receive that notice and would be able to then, because of the nature of the organization, transmit that information to its members, those who are interested in participating, since all landowners and residents are members, and thus be able to bring additional information or additional points of view to the government entity making the decisions. It adds increased flexibility to the current notice requirements that we have. But without significant cost to the county, city, or other organization that deals with land use planning.
Any questions of Representative Barnhart or Mr. Just? Representative, sometimes in reading this bill, I can't get my hand around the real definition of a community organization. There are some people in the state who really resent the fact that a community organization from Portland could go down to Lake or Harney County and enter into a land use discussion of which they have no interest whatsoever. Would this bill permit that?
No. Well, the bill would not require notice to that sort of organization. I'm not sure you could keep somebody out who wanted to come talk. I think that once a person shows up at a public hearing to speak, if there's time, they're probably allowed to speak. And I don't know that you can prevent that because of various constitutional requirements we have. This bill would only require notice of the pendency of that decision, or the hearings around that decision, to the community organization within which the land that the issue dealt with existed. So if we're talking about Lake County land and a Portland community organization, there's no requirement that Lake County give notice to the Portland community organization, only to the one in Lake County.
Okay.
That's clear.
Well, I think I'm almost there. I guess my apprehensive was in some kind of legal standing for, in essence, the Portland organization who was notified by the Lake County group of the same that there's a hearing with the county commissioners and you need to get down here and hear this. And then the group from Portland would intercede and actually be part of an intervention in that issue. Third party standing. I think it's quite a sore subject with some folks.
Well, if I could, Mr. Chair, I don't believe that this bill is intended to make any changes in whatever the existing law might be about that issue. As I read it, it is a notification statute, and the notice is to go to the organization or organizations within that exist that include the area of land that's being considered. And the organizations cannot be larger than the county that they exist in. So in the case of the example you've given, it would only be an organization in Lake County. Now, I don't know what the rules are about third-party interventions and whether or not someone from Portland could intervene in the land use decision in Lake County or not, but this bill does not change that, whatever that rule is.
Okay. Thank you. Now, you have a -1 amendment to this bill.
Yes, sir, and I think it's been given to the community administrator. At least I hope so.
Yes.
The -1 is to make it clear that it does have a limited geographic area. That was the point of it. My remarks have been made with the assumption that the -1s will be adopted.
Any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonner?
Yes. Ms. Representative?
Yes.
Are you anticipating that this will have any fiscal impact? Any material fiscal impact?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I don't believe that this bill has any material fiscal impact on anybody. If anything, it might actually reduce the cost to counties and other land use deciding agencies because they can make notice to a recognized community organization rather than to a number of individuals who have asked to be noticed on land use decisions. My suspicion is that in places where a strong community organization of the kind we're describing develops, that actually would reduce the number of people who would ask for personal notifications by the counties. That what this does do is it does require counties to give those, to recognize the organizations that meet the requirements of this bill and give them notice of those decisions in that situation. The current law, as I understand it, does not require counties to give notice to individuals outside of a certain range of the location. The problem with that, of course, is that in many situations, the kinds of situations we're thinking about, land use decisions affect people far beyond the area of the boundaries of the current notice requirements. And this simply adds fairness to the system without requiring the county to, or the other organization that makes land use decisions to make notice in a broadcast way that would have significant fiscal impacts on those organizations making the notice.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Chair.
B.J. Smith?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am B.J. Smith, and I am the Government Relations Director for Clackamas County. And I'm here to testify on House Bill 3137, really beginning with the premise that those means community organization have taken different shape in different counties throughout the state, and they mean different things to probably different jurisdictions. Clackamas County is a jurisdiction that has taken the concept of geographic community organizations in the unincorporated area, probably to the max, and then push past that in search of goal and citizen involvement. My concern, and the concern that I would raise, is whether or not this bill creates an overlapping community planning organization type structure. We have organizations throughout the county. In fact, we have about 43 unincorporated boundary areas for community planning organizations. And of those 43, we actively go out and try to recruit people and talk them into having active CPOs, is what we call them, but it is the same term as a community organization. We have 45 out of the 43 that are currently active. Those organizations follow county standards for bylaws and operational procedures, but they are not agents of the county, and they have great discretion in the roles that they take on to fit their community needs. We train them, however, in standard government practices having to do with record keeping, minutes and voting. We also set standards for how active those organizations have to be in order to be, and here's a term that is also in the bill, recognized by the county government. For instance, we require that our organizations meet 2 times a year, as well as have minutes and public notices. The reason for that is to make certain that there is a real public outreach opportunity going on by those organizations. We also have our county commission meet 1 to 2 times a year with the chairs of those organizations to talk about public policy issues that really have to do with land use and also broader community needs. Our CPOs may or may not be nonprofit organizations. It's entirely up to them. It's their choice. The choice they make is usually reflective of their community, the community they serve, and the level of public support they have, and oftentimes the number of developments in which there are land use applications. It's important to recognize that the CPOs do not exist simply for the purpose of reviewing or commenting on or appealing land use decisions. They are involved, they have broader bylaws, they are involved and encouraged in their goal one to be involved in the planning stages for an area. And an example that you are all aware of is the creation of the new city of Damascus, which was, in fact, an idea that I think had some of its genesis through the community planning organization in Damascus. The county requires baseline requirements before a group is recognized. Their annual requirements, we have bylaws. We work with them to make certain the public information is facilitated in the community. Now, what is the issue that I bring to you about this bill? And I think it has to do with definitions. The way I read the bill, community organization gets a benefit, I think, in land use planning, and that is that it gets early notice of pending land use decisions. And if you follow the bill through, it also has the opportunity, well, the county waives the fee for the for that community organization's involvement in the land use process, and I think it's about a $250 fee. Our community organizations that we call community planning organizations work very much like what is defined to be a community organization, with the exception that we do not require them to be a nonprofit. I can look at the other requirements here. Membership of the organization is open to all. Well, we actually encourage ours to be open to residents who reside, own property, or have businesses within their jurisdiction. Officers are elected. We actually review bylaws. The definition of the boundary for our community planning organizations is really set on some community interest standards. As I said, we have 43 in the unincorporated area. We are undergoing a process of kind of evolving our citizen involvement and local governance process, where we are looking at helping unincorporated communities create villages. And the one that comes to mind that you might be familiar with is the village up in Mount Hood, unincorporated community, but basically is a standalone community with a lot of service districts providing services. We are working actively through a process that started about 2 years ago to actually give this term village to Mount Hood, to kind of encourage it to exercise forms of self-governance in addition with community involvement. And that might include creating service districts to meet the long-term needs of that community. Well, it's unclear to me when we look at some of the language here whether or not we can overlay on top of that our village structure on top of this type of community organization as it's defined. Must this be a nonprofit or not a nonprofit? Can the county be involved to really mentor and come up with goal one standards for its community organizations under this particular choice of language in the bill? Having heard Representative Barnhart, I'm not certain that we're talking about the same thing at all. But I do think that as you look at our ordinances, we have used that term of art since 1993 about what a community organization is and created structures for community involvement. And I am simply putting on record some concern here about the choice of words to make certain that we don't, unfortunately, reduce the flexibility that counties such as mine have exercised in citizen involvement. And I'm open for any questions.
Any questions? Representative Greenwood.
Is it your sense then that if this bill passed, you'd have to do away with your CPO model?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenwood, it is unclear to me how it all works together. It isn't necessarily clear to me that we have to do away. There's a provision in here that says that pre-existing community organizations do not have to go away. But if I have a community organization that has met nearly every one of the requirements here in this bill, except for being a nonprofit, and it is the voice of the community, and I am providing to that organization a specific benefit in terms of the appeal procedure, and then I have another nonprofit organization come in for the purposes of providing a voice to that community, it seems that as we move the voices of the community along to the decision-making structure on land use applications, that the county commission may lose the benefit of having a consolidated community single voice advising them on development applications. So I think they might be able to exist in the same universe, but they are going to look very, very much like one another, with this being actually more of a self-generated organization than the CPOs are in the county, because we have created structures about what bylaws need to look like and how citizen involvement needs to happen. So that's it. That's the concern.
Follow?
What other form of organization might there be besides a nonprofit organization, and how many do you think of your existing organizations are not nonprofit organizations?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenwick, I would suspect that of our 36 or 37, and every given year one might go away and then come back, I would say there's a minority number of them, maybe guess would be between 10 and 15, that are nonprofits. They're not nonprofits for the purposes of citizen involvement. They are nonprofits because they raise money to the side, because they might want to pursue legal appeals of land use applications, and they need money to do that. In the most of our community planning organizations are simply what it sounds like. It's grass level citizen involvement. They do provide notice of a community meeting. We have a website that we host for them so that they can put their notice out to the community at large and have regular meeting dates. They are an association of citizens who are interested in the welfare of the community, not an official organization. They are recognized citizen involvement organization, but not a nonprofit.
I understand that.
Representative Nolan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as I read this, first of all, having taken organizations through the process of incorporating and securing a nonprofit designation, it's a non-trivial procedure. If some group was motivated in Clackamas County to do that because they thought they had a different perspective to bring that your CPOs don't bring, Clackamas County would have the burden of noticing one more person on your one more address on your normal notification. Mm-hmm. Is there some other burden that would be imposed on Clackamas County through this bill that I'm missing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nolan, I think where it gets a little bit confusing is the responsibility of the nonprofit organization to a specific boundary within the county. And if you you look at when it talks about the community organization has all of the characteristics of a neighborhood organization, which has a specific boundary, and you already may have a pre-existing organization there that is not a nonprofit organization, that's where you get a little, it becomes a little bit confusing to me as to how many voices of the community are you facilitating through that organizational role. To your question of can there be notice provided to other organizations, I think that we do have a parties list, and we are also pushing more and more. We're not there quite yet, but we're pushing more and more to actually have access to basic application materials on the website. And we're doing that. In fact, we are being encouraged by the community organizations, the community planning organizations in Clackamas County, to do that. We found that some of these applications are this thick, and they are expensive. But if we can get some of that public information up on our website, even in its abridged form, it gives more people more notice about the activities that are going on. Thanks.
Any further questions, Ms. Smith? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 3137? Schlack?
Chair, members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. Initially, I hadn't planned on testifying on this bill today. However, in listening to the testimony and also looking at it again, it does raise some issues that may be of concern to counties, and Representative Nolan raised the question about fiscal impact. Counties, local governments have had citizen participation since we started the statewide planning process. In fact, some counties and cities had citizen participation programs even that predated, you know, the statewide planning program. My concern here is, and I might be reading this wrong, but it appears that you are required to recognize an organization that meets certain criteria. How many in a geographic area are you required? I can see the situation because some neighborhood groups take an issue with this issue, and another one will take issue with something else, that we might have multiple neighborhood groups formed to address issues that. And I've seen a situation where you have one neighborhood group that's fairly large, and then it has a very contentious issue, and all of a sudden there's a group A and a group B. And what this would tell me is they could each form their own, and we could wind up with multiple neighborhood organizations that would be required to be recognized within a geographic area, and that is a concern to counties. Maybe one more notice isn't all that bad, but when you look at the number of organizations that Clackamas County has as an example, and then in one of those counties with a very active citizen participation kind of program, you could wind up doubling the number of organizations that you might have to notify, extend the courtesy for appeals to those, and you're really not fostering a community discussion, but you're beginning to break that into areas to the point where it might polarize rather than facilitate more community discussion to get to some kind of consensus and mediation, etc. So, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, I just want to offer that as a concern. Some jurisdictions at this point, some counties, have, because of the fact that we've gone into the planning program for years at this point. It's not like where we were back in the 70s and 80s where there was a lot of citizen involvement where you were, when you were first doing your comprehensive plan and zoning. And some counties have recognized their planning commission as their citizen involvement organization because of the lack of continued citizen participation in land use planning at this point, unless there's an issue that pops up. And then, you know, then there'll be a core group that will be motivated for a period of time, and then they'll go away again. But, Mr. Chair, I am concerned about multiple organizations being required to be recognized potentially by this bill. I'm not concerned as much if we're limited to one, and quite often when the programs were initiated, the local government identified the geographic area, and then there was a organization formed within it, like the citizen planning organizations. That's not as problematic, I think, as there would be if there would be a multitude of organizations in an area. So, Mr. Chair, thank you for giving me the opportunity to at least express that concern.
Any questions, Mr. Schlock? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3137 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2705. Mr. Honeycutt. Committee, also, there was a written testimony submitted by 1,000 Friends of Oregon on the House Bill 3137. Good afternoon, Dave. Well, I noticed that. They actually supported it. And then they're not here. Good afternoon, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of House Bill 2705. For those of you who are on the committee last session, you may remember House Bill 3016. This is House Bill 3016 revisited. 3016 came out of your committee last session on a 7-0 vote with the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Sat down in Ways and Means Committee till towards the end of the session, and then was kicked back out by the Speaker out into the Rules Committee. But by the time it had moved back into the Rules Committee, everybody was tired, cranky, and wanted to go home. And so it died in the House Rules Committee. The idea, the concept behind House Bill 2705 is they're currently under LCDC's Bill 11, there is a prohibition on the use of community septic, community sewer, or alternative sewage disposal systems in outside of urban growth boundaries. This bill would change that to go ahead and allow those types of developments, if they were approved by either the EQC, Environmental Quality Commission, or its working staff, DEQ, to go ahead. So if it met their requirements, and the property owners in this proposed area were willing to enter into an agreement, a common maintenance agreement, or give the local government the ability to enforce that common maintenance agreement, then you could go ahead and allow cluster development to go ahead and then share some type of community septic system. After the subsequent to obviously to last session, and as you talked about a lot in this committee, talked about a lot today, something happened on November 2nd of last year that may have an impact on this bill. And so as a result of the passage of Measure 37, I would propose amendments to this bill. My suggestion is that you take lines 13, 14, and 15 on the first page of the bill. It's section 2, sub 1B, and all of subsection 2, and eliminate those. What those provisions allow is local governments, if they wish to extend sewer service outside of urban growth boundaries to an area within a mile of the boundary of the local government to allow for the city sewer in these types of cluster development. That was fine 2 years ago, but as a result of Measure 37, that could actually give folks more ability to, when they make a Measure 37 claim, to go beyond what they could have done at the time that they purchased their property and make a development that they couldn't do under Measure 37, although that's fine with me. I know the politics of this building, and so I've talked with both Lane Shetterly and with the Linda Ludwig from the League, and have told them that I would recommend to the committee that we amend it and delete those two subsection B and all of subsection 2 from this bill.
I got lost in that a little bit, Mr. Chair.
First of all, are you done, Dave?
Yeah, that's fine. I've talked to Linda Ludwig from the League, and she told me that I could come up here and say if we do that, then the League is fine with the amendments. And I promised Director Shetterly that I'd ask you to hold off on the bill while we make the amendments, and I'll talk to somebody from their staff and see if we can get it done.
Wait, Representative Green?
I was just trying to find out what you said. He would like to amend that.
Oh, Chair Gerard, Representative Green, like, Section 2 of the bill, page 1, lines 9 through 15, what I would suggest that you do is delete lines 13 through 15. Just delete them in their entirety.
That that would take away, that would take away the extending the line out to be served by a city. It would simply allow a cluster to form their own sewer system.
Chair Gerard, Representative Greenwood, that's correct. It narrows the bill from last session, but as a result of the passage of Measure 37, allowing a local government to extend sewer outside of urban growth boundaries could conceivably give a property owner the ability to have a more intense development than they could otherwise have, a more intense 37 claim, essentially, than they could otherwise have, which, as I said, is certainly fine by our organization, but probably not acceptable, at least to some folks in the building.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative
Ackerman. Yes, as long as you're coming back with amendments, I'd just like to make a couple of suggestions to you, and we can deal with it later. These aren't too difficult. On line 23, you say allocating the cost of maintenance of the system seems to me to be quite narrow. I think it should include at least construction improvement and remediation of the system. I think that line 26 and 27, the idea of recovering attorney's fees to enforce the agreement is probably also, in my mind, is too broad. I've seen some situations where the attorney fees would be more than the cost that would be otherwise attributable back to the property owners. I think that should be, in my view, it should be narrowed down just a little bit. But that's just a personal view.
Chair Gerard, I represent Ackerman, more than happy to do those. I think those are certainly reasonable.
Representative Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hanukkah, I just want to make sure I'm reading this bill properly. Do you envision any changes to DEQ's groundwater standards that are either explicit or implied in this bill?
Chair Gerard, Representative Nolan, no, this bill doesn't have any limitations. In fact, it requires, in order for the cluster, for the community septic to be approved, it requires approval by the DEQ. It doesn't limit DEQ's authority. It actually expands it.
Thanks.
Dave, there is a fiscal report with this bill that says an amendment to a statewide goal requires DLCB to conduct hearings across the state, usually 10 two-day hearings, mail notice of each hearing to interested parties. The department estimates the goal amendment process required by this bill would utilize about $114,894 in agency resources. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, Mr. Chair, that was the original reason last session that the bill was had a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee when it came out of this committee. But towards the end of the session, there was a determination made that the costs of the bill could be absorbed under the agency's existing budget, and so it was sent back out of Ways and Means and referred back into Rules.
Okay, so I want to get Mr. Shetterly to comment on that when we rehear this bill.
Sure.
Okay. Any questions, further questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Since this bill also will be amended, we are amended right out of here. We will adjourn the House Committee on Land Use. Oh, we've got to close the work session on 2705 and then adjourn the House Committee on Land Use.
In terms of the work session.